Recently, I was contacted by a viewer who claims to hunt some not-so-normal game. They said they're gonna send me multiple letters over time depicting their strange and terrifying experiences. Here is an excerpt from the letter they sent me. Dear Swamp Dweller, this is the first of the letters that I plan to write you, so that you can read it on your channel. I'm incredibly grateful that you've given me the chance and the platform to share some of my experiences hunting the darker creatures of this world. I understand that you may not read this, but I'm happy just to even have the chance to get it out there. So, thank you for that, and hopefully, I'll send you my next letter sometime soon. So, without further ado, let's check out these creepy stories sent in from an alleged cryptid hunter. As always, if you have a story you would like to share in a future video, submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. Now, let's get in to these letters from a cryptid hunter. So, where to start? I have to say I'm not very good with most technology, but my girlfriend is helping me out. Plus, I can write just fine. So I think this will work out alright. I suppose I'll start by introducing myself. My name is Sam White Owl. Not your usual name, I know, but I'm half Cherokee, so there you have it. I'm a 47-year-old man, and let me tell you, I definitely am feeling my age. Many people in my line of work don't make it this far, and I will always be grateful that I have been around for as long as I have. Now, you might be wondering, what exactly is my aforementioned line of work? It's difficult to explain. I've never had to tell anyone quite like this, but I'm getting old, and I figure it's time that people should know. I am what is known simply as a hunter, capital H. If you're thinking camouflage clothing, big rifles, and deer stands, well, you're not terribly far off. Well, in some cases anyway. I enjoy that usual sort of hunting too, but I really am talking about hunting other things. The things that inspire nightmares and make you scared of the dark. The world is home to things that people don't believe in or understand, but in my culture, we've known about some of these creatures for millennia, and it's been my family's job for some time to deal with them. These things are what we know as cryptids, creatures, or, more simply, monsters. The Hunters, capital H again, are a worldwide organization dedicated to helping humanity coexist peacefully with monsters. It's not our job to keep these creatures secret or to hide them from you. In fact, I think most of us would like it if the modern world would just wake up and start acknowledging the fact that these creatures are in fact real. Unfortunately, in most societies today, people simply don't listen to the old tales, and that makes hunters' duties that much harder. But I do those duties nonetheless because I believe it's the right thing to do. As a hunter, I live my life job to job, taking tasks where they come, and traveling to different locations, dealing with monsters in each place as I go. Sometimes hunters are able to resolve things peacefully. Many monsters are not inherently aggressive and can be reasoned with or otherwise handled without bloodshed. I like these cases the best because nobody gets hurt, and I walk away without a new set of scars. But other times the situation gets violent, and hunters are forced to fight. That's what we do best, if I'm being honest. Many hunters are not as willing to take the diplomatic approach as I am, and when push comes to shove, we shove hard. We hunters are a fairly loose organization as far as things go. We don't have a great deal of bureaucracy or restriction, which is nice but can also be annoying when it comes to organizing things or getting resources. For example, there are some great custom weapon makers in the deep south of the USA, but they're tough to reach without contacting them directly. It's not like we have a hunter weapons depot stock with their stuff. But it wouldn't be my job to get those weapons, even if they were readily available. That's because most hunters have a guide, capital G. A guide is someone who liaisons with the hunter organization at large and sniffs out potential jobs and cases. My guide is an older man named Sergio. He used to be a hunter on the ground himself before he started working as a guide. I think he was partnered with at least two other hunters before he came to me, which goes to show how short hunter careers can be sometimes. Anyways, that's enough logistics. If you'd like to know any more about me or hunting in general, feel free to ask in the comments or however else. I'd be glad to give you more information in another update. But right now, I'd like to talk more about what I'm sure most of you are here for, the monsters. I've heard lots of stories both here and in other places online about people's experiences with cryptids, and many of them seem quite true to my own experience and knowledge. I've hunted quite a lot of creatures in my time, and I've encountered pretty much all of the common North American monsters and cryptids. If you have any questions about any creatures in particular, be sure to let me know in the comments as well. I suppose I'll start talking about some specific monsters now. This will be part survival guide, part personal account. I'll try to explain what each creature is, what it is not, and how to deal with it. Before talking about my own experiences, if I haven't had any encounters of my own, then I'm sure I can find some testimonies from other people who have. I've made a lot of friends and contacts in the hunters over the years, and I'm sure some of them would be happy to share their stories too. I know that there are lots of other people like myself out there who want the world to know and understand our side of the story. Anyways, let's get into it. I'll start with what is probably the most well-known cryptid of all, Sasquatch, aka Bigfoot. These guys are quite common, ranging all across the continental United States and Canada, from Alaska to Florida. They're also relatively peaceful as monsters come, and this makes them one of the most well-studied species. As humans, we have known about them and coexisted with them for a very, very long time. My Cherokee ancestors and people of the other native nations and tribes have legends and stories about Sasquatches that go back thousands of years before the European colonization of North America ever happened. And for the most part, humans and Sasquatches were able to get along peacefully. Like any interaction between intelligent species, there was occasional conflict, though. And so my family has a long tradition of stopping violence between our two kinds, one way or another. Sasquatches are generally much like the pictures you may have often seen. They look like ape men. Fully grown, they stand anywhere from 6 to 10 feet tall and weigh anywhere from 300 to upwards of 1,000 pounds. They have a body structure that's very similar to that of a human, albeit with proportionally longer arms, proportionally longer hands and feet. They are covered in shaggy hair from head to toe, and from what I've seen, they have nearly as much range in their fur color as humans do with our own hair. Most Sasquatch have chocolate brown hair, but it's nearly as common for them to have gray or black fur. Some have reddish fur, or russet fur, while others have almost blonde or sandy colored hair. Rarely, Sasquatches can also be ash colored, also white sometimes. Although truly white hair in a Sasquatch only occurs when they're born albino, which can certainly happen. Geography seems to have some impact on the color of the hair as well, but not necessarily the environment or climate. It seems to be more of a population-based thing. For example, take the Sasquatches of southern and eastern Ohio. Often called the Grassman, they tend to have reddish-brown fur, and it's likely that their children will look the same. Like humans, Sasquatch hair grows on almost their entire bodies, save for the palms and soles of their feet, and I believe parts of their faces. Sasquatch social structure is pretty fluid, just like the humans. Usually, they're solitary creatures, preferring to be alone. Unless they're siblings, you know, bachelors or a mated pair. But some make groups of up to 20 individuals sometimes, although it's very rare to see so many together. For the most part, You can expect to find Sasquatches either alone or in small groups of only a few. The physically stronger one usually tend to lead the group, and as many of these tend to be older Sasquatches, they have had some time to get to know the land they live on, where to find food, where humans live, good travel routes, and so on. They teach the younger generation these things and pass on their knowledge. Like humans, other apes, and some other animals, Sasquatches are able to teach other things. They're very intelligent, and I'd say they're almost as smart as humans. I've been told about Sasquatches ever since I can remember, and because my family has been in the hunters for a very long time, I learned a lot about all sorts of cryptids and monsters as I grew up. My first personal experience with a Sasquatch wasn't until I was about 9 or 10 years old, though. A very long time ago now, I know. First, a little background. My mother's side is the Cherokee one, and that side of my family comes from the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. My father is black and he's from Washington State. I'm going to try to keep all the locations in my post relatively vague, both to protect people's privacy and to keep the details of the cases just a bit private. When my parents divorced, I was just about 5 years old, and my mother got full custody of me. So I grew up in Oklahoma with her mainly. However, my dad would come to take me to Washington about twice a year or so. Although his side of the family wasn't involved with the hunters, they did enjoy regular old deer hunting. So they'd take me out into the woods every so often when I'd go up there, teaching me how to shoot and track and such. Both sides of my family taught me how to enjoy and respect nature, and I'll always be incredibly grateful for that. It was on such a trip that I first saw a Sasquatch. I won't give away the exact location, but it was in the eastern part of the state, in a densely wooded area. I was trekking along with my dad and grandfather, heading through a valley. The trees were mainly conifers, and I remember it being slightly overcast, not too hot or too cold. It was just before noon, and I recall being hungry. Suddenly, we heard a knock, and we all stopped walking. Knocks, or tree knocks, are a sound that Sasquatches commonly use to communicate. By stripping the bark off of a stick or a log and hitting it against a tree, they make these knocking sounds that carry for great distances through the woods. They use the sound like a person might use a shout or might yell, "Hey!" The sound advertises the presence of the Sasquatch and often is a warning or a statement of power. This time we heard one very distinct knock, and then silence. I remember my dad looking to my grandfather, and then taking my hand and starting forwards again, moving more slowly and calculated. I spoke up asking if that was a Sasquatch, and my dad answered that it probably was. After a minute or so, we heard another knock. It was closer and louder this time. It seemed to be coming from a ridge to our left, and we looked in that direction. Animals would like to have the high ground in situations, and this was no different. There, on the ridge above us stood what I can only describe as a Sasquatch, slightly blocked from view behind some of the bushes, but still visible nonetheless. It was a male, judging by the broad shoulders and bulky frame, and if I had to estimate now, he was probably 8 feet tall or more, although I'm probably not remembering correctly. He had dark red, almost brown fur and was still carrying the stick he used to knock on the tree. His posture was seemingly neutral, neither threatened nor threatening. He just stood there, watching us with what seemed like a mixture of curiosity and wariness. My dad held up his hands to indicate that we had no weapons, and then turned to me and my grandfather, indicating that we should go back the way we came. We hadn't caught anything that day, but that didn't bother me. I was absolutely elated. I'd seen pictures and remnants of creatures before, but I had never seen one alive that I could remember. That was the first time I'd seen a monster alive and active, and I was so happy. I didn't feel scared, although I guess the Sasquatch's appearance was a bit intimidating. I don't think my father and grandfather were necessarily scared either. They just wanted to keep all of us safe, and so they decided to head back the way we came in order to let the Sasquatch be. From my mom's family, they knew about monsters and such, and knew to respect their boundaries. Most people don't know or care about those boundaries, and when they cross them, things can get very ugly, very fast. A few years later, when I was 13 or so, my mom started taking me with her on some of her less intensive cases to start teaching me the ropes of capital H, hunting. We went down to Florida on one of these trips in order to investigate sightings of a skunk ape. Skunk apes are not actually some weird hybrids between skunks and apes. That would certainly be an interesting and cool creature, but the truth is a bit less exciting than that. Skunk apes are just a subspecies of Sasquatch that inhabit the southeastern US, mainly Florida to Louisiana. The name comes from their smell because they absolutely reek. Take the odor of rotten eggs and sulfur, combine them, and increase the power of the stench by about tenfold, and you'll start getting the idea of what skunk apes smell like. They're a bit smaller and lighter in color than most other Sasquatches, with a sort of mane and hair that is incredibly long. This particular case had been called in because a skunk ape had apparently mauled two people. They were brothers who had been out hunting. They hadn't been killed, but they were severely injured with cracked ribs, fractured skulls, and internal bleeding, which had all been dealt with at the hospital they'd managed to get to. Both had talked about a man-sized ape coming out of the trees and beating them within an inch of their life, but the official explanation was that a black bear was responsible for the attack. This is the kind of willful ignorance that really gets to me. If there aren't even claw marks or bite marks on the victims, was it really even a bear attack? Their injuries were consistent with blunt force trauma, which is exactly what fist of a Sasquatch will cause. Unfortunately, people just don't want to admit to that. Anyways, my mom and I dealt with that case pretty quickly. The skunk ape was a lone female and her home range was being converted into housing developments. The hunters had been local and were practically hunting in their own backyards when they had gotten too close to the skunk ape's nest. She lashed out, and even though she hadn't killed the men, she had still proven herself to be a threat. My mother and I made the decision, together, that we weren't going to kill her. Instead, we'd tranquilize her and relocate her to somewhere safer. Along with my mom's guide, a lady named Hannah, we were able to pinpoint an estate park in Alabama where we'd hoped she would be able to find a new life. The next day, my mom and I were able to track down the skunk ape and tranquilize her. My mom even let me take the shot. And after she dropped, we called in one of the hunter relocation crews to pick her up and take her to a new home. It was a clean job with no bloodshed necessary. Well, besides the hunters who were expected to make a full recovery. I love it when things work out that way, even though it is pretty rare that they do. If this first post goes over well, then maybe I'll tell you guys about some of the other cases that weren't so clean, and some of the monsters that caused them. Most of the time with Sasquatch, it's pretty simple. Since they aren't inherently dangerous or aggressive towards humans, it's usually pretty easy to relocate them. There's plenty of empty space across North America where we can take them to live out their lives without being afraid of humans or hurting them. This goes for the largest, most aggressive Sasquatches too. One example of this would be a Sasquatch that I hunted in 1994. I had only been working on my own for probably just a few weeks, and I had already handled some very aggressive monsters. So when Sergio told me about a Sasquatch wreaking havoc in British Columbia, I figured I'd be more than up to handle it. When I arrived in the province, I immediately picked up a fresh lead on the Sasquatch. Three people had been killed while camping in the mountains of a local national park. Though the hunters aren't directly part of any government agency, we still have badges and licenses for our organization, and those usually seem official enough to let us go where we need. This time I showed my badge to some park rangers and policemen who were investigating the scene of the killings, and I was let through to examine the area. Two women and one man had died quickly, it seemed, and hadn't put up much of a fight. The Sasquatch had broken one of the woman's necks, seemingly by throwing her into a tree, and had smashed in the heads of the other two. It wasn't very messy, and I had seen much worse, but it was obviously not pleasant either. Luckily, the Sasquatch had left some prints nearby, and I gathered my stuff. I headed off into the woods in search of it. The next day I caught up to it at a small creek. This one was a huge male, definitely over 9 feet in height, with dark gray hair and a physique that would make any professional bodybuilder look twig thin in comparison. He was squatting by the creek, using his hands to scoop water into his mouth. I was downwind of him and slightly uphill, on a slight ridge that overlooked the creek. I was in a perfect position. I shot him with a tranquilizer dart on the side of the neck, then began to run some distance away along the ridgeline. It'd take just a few moments for the tranquilizer to work, and I didn't want him catching me in that time. The big guy let out a roar of surprise when I shot him. Just like other great apes, Sasquatch makes a variety of noises. When they're in pain or angry, they give loud, earth-shaking roars that you can feel in the pit of your chest. I hadn't hurt this one, but he was surprised enough to make an enraged bellow. I turned back to see him rise to his feet and take a step forward, looking around himself for the source of the dart. He saw me and took a few staggering steps towards me, and then collapsed onto his back with a loud thud. I called in a crew, and soon enough they arrived to take him to the location I decided upon earlier. A nice safe area away from any human habitation. From my stories, you can hopefully see that Sasquatches are not just mindless beasts. They have thoughts and feelings just like us, and for the most part, they just like to be left alone. This goes for a lot of monsters, especially ones that are not predatory. If you come across a Sasquatch, it's usually best just to walk in the opposite direction. Don't run, point, flail around, or otherwise make yourself seem obvious or like a threat. Try to not make eye contact with the Sasquatch either. Just keep your head down, walk away, and you'll generally be just fine. Sasquatches usually attack if they're starving, if they feel threatened, or if you're near their nest. Any other time, they're usually very peaceful and even gentle creatures. If a Sasquatch charges you, though, you'll almost certainly have to defend yourself. Other animals will do mock or bluff charges to scare off potential foes, but I've never seen a Sasquatch do this. Once they charge, they always seem to commit to it. You won't be able to outrun them either, so you'll probably wind up fighting. If you're expecting this kind of situation, it's usually best to bring some sort of rifle with a high caliber, penetrating round. Sasquatch doesn't have very thick skin, but their hair can be very thick, and it often acts as protection against a lot of projectiles. The hair around their faces and neck is thinner though, and that's where you'll want to shoot. Just like with a human, headshots are most effective. I've never had to kill a Sasquatch, but I know hunters who have, and they always say that it's unpleasant. Maybe they feel that way because Sasquatches are so similar to humans. I'm just thankful I've never had to do it, even though I've had quite a few other unpleasant experiences. I'll tell you about some of those later if you guys are interested. Anyway, I think this has been long enough. I'll certainly answer any questions that you guys have in the comments down below. And if you guys want to hear about something in particular, just let me know, and I'll definitely see if I can fit it in. Like I said, if this post goes well, then I'll absolutely follow up with some more. For now, though, I think I've given you guys a fair bit to think about. I'll be back soon. This has been Sam White Owl, signing out. Recently, I started a new series because a viewer hit me up with a very interesting email. This viewer was named Sam White Owl, and they claimed that they had been hunting cryptids for a very long time and wanted to share their stories after retiring. As I said before, there is no real way for me to really prove or disprove these claims, but they're entertaining nonetheless. These are stories like you probably never heard before. Sam sent me another little excerpt before this next letter. Hey Swamp Dweller, it's Sam White Owl. Here's my second letter to you. It may be not as intriguing as the first, since a lot of this letter is me answering audience questions, but since I got a lot of that out of the way here, we'll get more into the creepier and stranger stories in future letters. I hope this finds you well, and here's the second letter. Before we get into the story, be sure to hit that like button, be sure to subscribe if you're new, and send in any stories you may have at swampdweller.net. Now, let's get into what Sam White Owl has to share with us. Hello everyone, it's Sam White Owl, back again. I hope everyone is doing well and staying safe during these times. I'd like to start off by saying, wow, You guys really seemed to respond well to my first letter, and I'm honestly shocked at the positive feedback I've been getting. It's been more than I expected, really, and I'm so grateful that listeners have been so open to hearing more of these little tales that I have. I've also been getting quite a lot of questions, and while I can't answer them all, I will do my best to get most of the important common ones. My girlfriend says that I should create an account to answer some of the questions directly, but for now, I'll just try responding to some of them on here. Once I get some things cleared up, we'll be free to get more into the stories. Hopefully, this letter will answer a lot of the questions before we move on to the more stories and information. If you don't want to hear about my answers to your questions, feel free to skip ahead about halfway through to where I actually start talking about the creatures more directly. So, question time. First, I've gotten a lot of people comparing my work to the TV show Supernatural. I know about this show, but I've actually never seen it. A lot of other hunters brought it to my attention, saying that it featured a monster hunter with the same first name as me, and I've been shown clips of it, but I've never watched a full episode. Supposedly it's pretty good though. I heard that it dealt a lot with angels and demons though, and that's not really my thing. But if it does deal with more monsters and cryptids, I feel like I probably wouldn't want to watch it. Lots of TV shows and movies often spread disinformation about creatures. Whether intentionally or not, they also make cryptid hunting into a more attractive pastime, rather than a messy and violent job. Not to mention that I've never met any hunter who's as good-looking as the characters in Supernatural. I'm certainly not an attractive young white guy. Moving on. I heard a few comments wondering why the government wouldn't suppress me or my knowledge, or why this information, being public, isn't a bigger deal. There are a couple of things I can say to this. The first is that hunters are not affiliated directly with any government, whether of the US or any other country. Our organization is a global one that's existed in some form or another for centuries, and we've become largely independent because of that. To my knowledge, we've never operated openly in coordination with any sort of inside or outside government body. Maybe this is because we don't feel that we can trust others to act with our same interest in mind. Maybe it's because we'd rather keep our secrets, which brings me to another point. The Hunters officially operate undercover, and always have done so since our founding as an organization. Our existence is not publicly acknowledged or accepted. But there's no hunter rule that says we can't divulge our secrets. I am one of a small minority of hunters who believes that we should go public, so to speak, and release all of our information to the world at large. Most hunters, including the leadership of the organization, are firmly against this due to the nature of our work. They believe that going public could compromise our organization and the creatures that we deal with. They have a point though, but it's not the hunter's job to keep either creatures or organizations secret. Our job is to ensure that humanity can coexist with monsters peacefully, and I believe that in order to truly do that, we need to let people know what they're dealing with. This is just one avenue that I found to be helpful in doing that. I'm used to people not believing what I say. It comes with the territory. I used to make a bigger deal of it, but I'm getting a little too old to care that much anymore. I just care to keep you all safe, and that's why I'm writing these letters. Some people also asked why I didn't take pictures. There are a couple of things I could say to that too. First is that cameras have definitely gotten smaller and easier to use, so maybe on a future hunt, I can try and get some photos for you guys. However, they'd be on my cell phone, which doesn't have a great camera. This brings me to the main reason I don't really take many photos. There are already tons of pictures and videos out there. All it takes is a simple internet search to find them. However, most are poor quality from far away, and so people don't believe the pictures are genuine. If you've ever worked with wild animals, however, you'll know that it's often difficult to get clear and close-up shots with just a cell phone. When blurry photos of chimpanzees or wild dogs show up online, people excuse them, and nobody doubts that they're real. When it's a picture of a Sasquatch, however, then people immediately say it's fake. So, there's a double standard at play here. Plus, no matter how good the quality was or how close I was, I have a feeling that any sort of picture or video I would take would just be thrown away as fake or some sort of Hollywood prop, just like what happened with so many other photos and videos. And briefly, As for the DNA testing route, I've seen a couple of tests, and honestly, it's been discovered that unknown primate DNA has been discovered somewhere in the northern US before. I believe you can actually find that online. This was almost certainly Sasquatch related. Please forgive me for not remembering exactly where or when this was, but I'm sure you can look it up. However, it's important to remember that DNA testing sites may also have their own agendas in mind. And even if we hunters did send things to them, they weren't able to identify. They might have reason to keep the results secret as well. Who knows why? And I'm not going to roll up on some government site with a dead or captured monster in tow. Absolutely not. Who knows what they might do? The native side of my family has been a victim to mass genocide by the US, and the black side of my family has been victim to mass enslavement. So you'll have to excuse me if I don't exactly trust the government of my home country. There have been several hundred years of experience with that. If governments still can't treat their fellow humans or other animals with dignity, respect, and compassion, what makes you think they'll act any differently for monsters? Anyway, my goal isn't to defend myself or explain everything away, and my girlfriend says I'm getting sidetracked. Like I said, what I really care about is that everyone is safe out there. So, on to some more straightforward questions. More than one person asked how they can join the hunt for cryptids. Honestly, I would say don't. This is a lifestyle where every job, every task, and every case can literally put your life on the line. There are some people who can accept that, though. To you, I say that if the hunters want you, we will find you. There is a special wing of our group that's dedicated to scouting out the best trappers, trackers, and regular hunters from around the world. And if you become known to them, and they decide that we could use your help, they will come to you. I wish it was as simple as applying online or something, but again, our organization officially operates off the grid. It's just not that easy. Do you have to have native blood to be a hunter? Absolutely not. The Cherokee side of my family just happens to have been in this general profession for a very long time, some thousands of years according to family histories. This has always been common knowledge in our community, and we've been publicly known in our community as hunters ever since we joined the organization. But again, in an official capacity, the hunters work undercover. How many types of cryptids are there? A lot. The hunter databases have catalogs of several thousand species across the world. They're common, much more common than you might think, but again, people don't want to believe. It's interesting because creatures like the giant squid or the okapee were once considered cryptids until humans found them and acknowledged their existence. Maybe something similar will happen with other monsters as time goes on. A lot of people asked, how do I protect myself from cryptids? Well, whenever you're away from civilization, keep your eyes and ears open. I don't necessarily recommend being armed at all times, but having a good weapon by your side can certainly help you out. Most monsters require high-powered weapons and high-caliber ammunition to bring them down, so you'll need equipment designed for the big game. But many creatures are also scared by loud noises like gunshots and by the sight of people carrying large protective objects like guns. The bear spray actually works fairly well against a number of creatures, believe it or not. And if you're a person of faith, then protective measures like praying can work wonders for your mind and soul. I wouldn't trust entirely in prayer to stop an attacking monster, though. But praying for you to go out can at least give you some sort of comfort and peace of mind, which can be half the battle. I carry several personal charms on me almost every time I leave my house, and certainly on every hunt. These aren't just to stop monsters outright, they also give me mental and spiritual strength and vigor, and that can be just as important as any gun. I do carry guns on my hunts though. My weapon of choice through the 90s was a custom-built elephant rifle, designed for a 416 Remington Magnum cartridge. That gun served me quite well on all of my hunts, and was designed even to fire tranquilizer darts if the need should arise. Times have changed though. And now I use another custom-made rifle that fires a .458 lot round. Rifles are always my staple weapon, although depending on the creature I'm hunting, I may bring along a shotgun instead. The Remington 870 has been a solid recent choice for me. Sidearms aren't really my cup of tea, but since the early 2000s, the weapon makers that I mentioned in my earlier letter have made me some great handguns that have definitely caught my attention. My current pick is a customized version of the Taurus Raging Hunter. Ironic name, I know. It's a hand cannon that I got rigged up to an old magazine rather than a cylinder. It fires a 454 Casull round. Finally, I often carry an assortment of melee weapons, depending on the hunt and the monster, and the weapon that always sticks out to me and is always on my side is my paternal grandfather's Bowie knife, which I carry as an absolute last resort. I've only had a few occasions that I've had to use this knife, and boy, I'm grateful for that. Phew. It's harder than I thought to answer so many questions. I even got a comment from Sweden, asking about some of the creatures there. There are absolutely cryptids and hunters there, and although I've never been to that country in particular, I was in Norway this past summer. I got to deal with some interesting situations while I was there. I was teamed up with a hunter named Ingrid, and we were investigating some activity in the mountains there. Maybe I'll tell that story a bit later. I also got questions asking where I operate. Being that I'm from the US, I'm based here. But I have done things out of this country, and I've traveled all over the world on jobs. Typically in a foreign country, I try to link up with another hunter or hunters, but there have been times when I've had to work alone. Anyway, I think that's enough of the big questions answered for now. So let's talk about some more specific monsters and cases. I got several questions about a certain Navajo monster, and we'll get there. But before we go to that place, I'd like to talk about at least two other creatures. I got questions about these two monsters as well, and they're a bit easier to discuss with non-native people. First, let's discuss a cryptid species that I got a few questions about, and that I know is fairly commonly talked about on both this channel and some others. Like nearly all monsters, these creatures have a few different names, and the most popular name seems to be crawlers. That name seems to be fairly recent, and hunters have been calling these monsters Ashmen or Pale Men for as long as I can remember. We may have taken the name Pale Man from the movie Pan's Labyrinth, but I think we were saying that before the movie came out. Anyway, I'll try to use these different names throughout the story interchangeably. Crawlers, Ashmen, or Pale Men are typically anywhere from 5 to 8 feet tall. They're humanoid in appearance. They have long, thin limbs and emaciated, almost skeletal-like appearances. You may see their ribs or their vertebrae sticking out underneath their skin. The sockets of their eyes are usually sunken and dark, but their eyes themselves glow when light passes over them, like two little pinpricks of white or yellow. They have mouths filled with sharp, pointed teeth. But when closed, you may not even see these mouths. They tend to not have lips or noses. Their appearance is absolutely terrifying, and it's no wonder that most people's first reaction to seeing a crawler is to freeze up or run in the opposite direction. I think it's because of these creatures falling into an uncanny valley that they almost look human. But they're just different enough that it's still obvious that they're not human. Ashmen are found across the United States, southern Canada, and Australia. And to be honest, I have no idea where they come from or what exactly they are. They generally look like extremely pale and thin humans, but they have much greater speed and strength than we would. Did they evolve separately from us or alongside us? I truly do not know. An Australian hunter friend of mine believes that pale men are related to humans somehow. He says that they might be offshoots of our species that developed a different lifestyle than the rest of our kind. I'm not sure if this is true, but they do look an awful lot like us, and they seem to be at least as intelligent as most animals. As you might expect, crawlers tend to live in caverns and cave systems. They are primarily nocturnal, but I have heard a few stories of them being active during the daytime. They usually sleep when the sun is up, before emerging from their caves at night to feed. They go after small game, primarily squirrels, small rodents, and especially rabbits. Ashmen are very strong, however, and I've seen them take fawns and small deer down before. In one particularly odd case in West Virginia, I even came across evidence of a pale man having grabbed a few cow calves. People often see crawlers on the side of roads or trails, and nobody sticks around to find out more about them. As horrifying as these Ashmen look, however, they aren't actually very dangerous. When people run away from them, they rarely give chase as other cryptids might. and on the few occasions where Pale Men have attacked people, the wounds were almost never fatal. You still don't want to bother them though, so if you see one, just keep your distance and move away. They may screech at you, but this is usually just a warning, similar to how humans might yell, "Get back," or "Stay away." If they come at you, though, then I'm sure bullets are effective on them. I've known hunters who have killed crawlers, and they say that headshots and chest shots work very well. Even just the noise of a gunshot will generally scare them away. Like many nocturnal, cave-dwelling creatures, bright lights and loud sounds will drive ashmen away. They also seem to fear fire, so if you have anything flaming or burning, like some kind of torch that can help protect you from a potential Pale Man attack, that would be beneficial. My first meeting with a crawler was sometime in my early teens, and it was a very standard encounter as these things go, so I apologize if it's not terribly interesting. I was going through some caves with a cousin of mine who was interested in spelunking. He'd rather not identify himself, but since he told me he's always liked the name Rob, that's what we'll call him. There are a few nice caves in Oklahoma that you can explore, and Rob and I were in one of these. Like in my previous post, I won't say the actual location. I've never liked being in confined spaces like caves, but I think Rob was trying to get me into caving at the time. He's about 7 years older than me, and he doesn't have any younger siblings, so I was like a little brother to him. We used to hang out a lot, and at this time we were pretty deep into this cave. Rob was leading the way, and I was a short distance behind him. We were able to stand up and walk for most of the trip, but we came to a fork in the path for a little while. Rob stopped here, looking off down the tunnel to the right. He pointed down in that direction. "Do you smell that?" he asked, and I sniffed. There was something else along with the usual mustiness of the caves. I recognized it as the smell of aging meat and an odor that we were both familiar with. That was odd, I thought. Why would there be meat so far back in this cave? I told him it might be an animal or something dead. Rob looked back at me with this crazy grin and started going towards the smell, saying that we should check it out. I started shaking my head. I didn't like that idea. I knew some cryptids live in caves, and I wanted to be safe. "Rob, that's stupid, come back," I told him, but he was already clambering over the rocks into the tunnel. I had no choice but to go after him. I only had a knife on me, so if something jumped us, we were probably screwed. It wasn't long before we came upon the source of the smell. There was a rock that was like a little ledge, off the right side of the tunnel. When we shone our headlamps in that direction, we saw that thing sitting on top of the ledge was not a rock, but it was a hunk of discarded meat, still attached to the bone. There were a few other small bones scattered around the ledge. Most looked like squirrels, mice, and other various small rodents, but the meat was definitely from something bigger. Maybe a pig or a goat. I couldn't tell, and I didn't want to. I knew that we had to go. "What the hell is this?" Rob asked, and I grabbed his arm and yanked him backward. "It's a feeding area, idiot! Something lives here!" I hissed at him. I guess Rob had had enough because he started following me back the way we'd come. As we walked back down the cave, I saw something to the left with my headlamp. I immediately whirled to see two glowing white eyes reflecting back at me on the other ledge about 10 feet above us. Off to the side of the cave, I saw a skinny white body crouching down on the ledge in a squatting position. It was a hairless head looking right at us. Rob yelled something like, "Oh crap," and started running and rushing past me in the direction of the cave entrance. I was frozen in fear for just a second, just watching as this skinny human-like thing scuttled backward into the shadows. Once it was gone, I snapped out of it and started running after Rob, my heart racing. I had no idea if it was dangerous, so I did the first thing that I could think of. As we ran, we heard a screech come from behind us, echoing off the cave walls and spurring us to run faster. I looked behind me after the noise, but couldn't see anything. When I looked ahead again, I'd lost sight of Rob around a bend in the path. I called out his name, but his answer seemed like it was coming from miles away. The last thing I wanted to be was lost and alone in this cave with whatever this thing was, and so I ran as fast as I could like my life depended on it. I tripped a couple of times and hurt my hands as I fell into the rocks, but eventually I caught up with Rob where he'd stood to catch his breath. We didn't say anything to each other, just standing there panting and wheezing from our run. I kept looking behind us to see if we were being followed, but there was nothing. Eventually we kept moving, not exactly running, but still walking fast. We made it safely out of the cave and immediately started driving back to Rob's house. "I don't know what that was," I told Rob when we were on the road, figuring he might have expected to, you know, have an answer from me, but he just shook his head and kept driving. We got home after that, and everything was actually pretty normal. I asked my mother what we may have seen, and she told me about the Ash Men. I called Rob later on and explained the whole thing to him, and even though we both realized that we probably weren't in that much danger, we still never went caving in that place again. Maybe my mother or another hunter did something about it, but I'm not sure. That encounter was pretty standard, from the stories and accounts I've heard, but I've seen a pale man in Australia too while doing some recon in the outback for another job. I was in the central area of the country with the Australian hunter I mentioned before. His name is William. We were walking through a dried-up creek bed after dark, headlamps on. We were chatting quietly when we heard pretty loud rustling from some of the bushes beside us. Both of us immediately turned, guns ready, and we saw a large, tall shadow stand up from the bushes. This crawler was about 7 feet tall, and our lights reflected off its glowing eyes as it stared us down. It probably expected that we had run, but William and I weren't budging. I fired off 2 shots into the air, and faster than I could blink, the Ash Man dropped onto all fours and started racing away from us. They have a very odd gait when they're moving at full speed like that, like an abounding run. But this cryptid was clearly scared of us, and after it was gone, William and I made it back to our camp without incident. Over the years, I've seen more pale men here and there, usually on the sides of the road or on trails, usually late at night. I've never actually had a job to hunt one down, though. Their glowing eyes and skeleton-like bodies are certainly horrific, but as long as you just go away from them in a timely manner, you should be all right. Anyway, that's about it for crawlers. Scary creatures, but luckily not terribly dangerous, as far as I've seen. Next, I think we'll talk about a certain canine humanoid that is truly a threat. I've created a short list of monsters that I'd like to talk about, so let me know if you'd like to see that. Next time, I'll try to spend less time answering questions and more on stories and information. But again, if you have any more questions, please don't hesitate to ask. But for now, just stay safe, everyone, whether it's by wearing a mask and social distancing, or by being aware of what you're doing while out in the woods. We'll talk more soon. This has been Sam White Owl, signing out. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. We are here with the third letter from alleged cryptid hunter, Sam White Owl. These tales so far have been downright strange, creepy, and fascinating. It seems that you guys have really been enjoying these letters from Sam, just as much as I have, and he seems to be enjoying sharing his stories. Here is the latest excerpt from the letter he just sent. Hi, Swamp Dweller. It's Sam again with my third letter. Sorry about the wait. This one is a good bit longer than the previous two, so hopefully it'll give your listeners something to chew on. It does have a few odd words that are hard to pronounce, but I tried to give you the best pointers I could. I also tried to make the question and answer section a little bit shorter. Anyway, I hope you all enjoy. Before we jump right into these creepy stories, be sure to send in any stories you may have to swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I'd love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. Now, sit back, relax, and get ready for some creepy cryptid hunting stories. Hey everyone, it's Sam White Owl back again. I hope you're all staying safe and keeping sane during this weird and wild year. I'm still so happy to see that you guys are enjoying this series, and I'm happy to keep providing more information and stories. I'll start this letter off by answering some more questions, but since I covered quite a bit in the previous letter, we'll keep the Q&A part a bit shorter this time. I've actually been sending these letters to the channel from my nephew's email, since I don't have a public one. So maybe I'll see if he has a YouTube account that I can use to get to, so I can actually answer some of your questions directly. Somebody brought up the idea of making a subreddit, which may not be a bad idea either. We'll see. But for now, let's get into some of your questions. As before, feel free to skip ahead a little if you'd like to immediately get into this letter's stories. What is the most dangerous cryptid? This is a difficult question to answer because pretty much all monsters can be dangerous in their own right. But some are naturally more aggressive or threatening to humans. The Wendigo is one such monster. Yes, they are real, but they are incredibly rare nowadays, and very difficult to kill. No, Wendigo does not have antlers. The antler creatures you might see are usually called deer people by hunters. We can talk about both of these cryptids in another letter. The Philippine Aswang is another very dangerous monster, and if you are stupid enough to anger a troll or a thunderbird, then they are often deadly as well. All in all, though it's a tough answer to question, it's a bit like asking what the most dangerous animal is. Hippos, lions, tigers, vipers, elephants, or even mosquitoes could all be valid answers to that question. I've gotten a couple of comments talking about the Missing 411 series. I know a little bit about the theory, and I'm almost certain that some missing people are indeed missing because of cryptids. But I'd have to look into the matter more to tell you exactly what species I think could be involved. Are there any places that people should stay away from? This is funny because cryptids can be pretty much anywhere. There are even some that look like humans or have a human form. This makes it very tough to really avoid them. However, many of the most dangerous creatures live in places that are relatively far away from humans. This can be the deep parts of the woods or rainforest, the far northern tundra, or the deep ocean. Places like these where you should really be aware of your surroundings and probably bring a friend, a weapon, or both. Being in groups makes it a lot less likely that you'll be attacked by any monster or wild animal, and makes it harder to get lost or stranded anywhere. Are there any animals that we thought were extinct but are still alive today? Not that I know of. There are some dinosaur-like cryptids, but others, like the Loch Ness Monster, don't seem to exist. Sorry, Nessie fans. But birds are technically classified as dinosaurs, so maybe you can be happy with that. Have I hunted a gamer? Very funny. However, I've had to fight people before, but that's a dark and a sad story that I'm not going to tell right now. I got a few questions about vampires, and yes, they are real. They don't shapeshift or have any magical powers, but they are very strong and very fast. Like some other monsters, they look almost identical to humans. They can get along with humans just fine, and there are actually several European hunters who are vampires themselves. I'll end the question and answer part of this letter by addressing some more international listeners. This time I saw comments from South Africa, New Zealand, and Canada. I've been to Canada many times since it's so close to the US, and there is quite a bit of overlap in monster species between the two countries. There is a very active Canadian hunter community. You'll find crawlers in southern Canada, Sasquatch and deer people all across the country, more dangerous cold weather cryptids like Wendigo further north, and some others as well. There are actually hunters in New Zealand as well. Although not as many as in Australia, there are several types of creatures that live in New Zealand. The most dangerous are the Maero, who is similar to Sasquatch. You can find them in upland alpine regions, and they're quite rare. There are also smaller monsters called the Patupaiarehe and the Ponaturi. These are a little like fairies or goblins, and the Ponaturi. These are a little like fairies or goblins, but they are also very rarely seen, and not incredibly dangerous. Finally, every so often, New Zealand hunters may have to deal with Taniwa, which are huge aquatic reptiles. Most Taniwa were killed off long ago, but there are a few left, and the hunters keep close tabs on them. As for South Africa, there is a decent-sized hunter population there, including some who come from the Zulu and Sotho traditions. Perhaps The most dangerous South African cryptid is the Imphundulu, also called the Lightning Bird. Many hunters and I believe they're somehow related to the North American Thunderbird. Then, there's the Tikalashe, which I'm sure you've heard of. They don't have nearly as many magic powers as they do in some legends, though. Then you've got the Ikayamba, which are like huge eels, and Grootslangs, which are enormous snakes that live in caves. No, Grootslangs do not have an elephant head, but they do have tusk-like fangs and weird little flaps that look like ears. Hopefully some of those last answers gave you a little glimpse into the wider world of cryptids. There are monsters and hunters pretty much everywhere. I would guess that most listeners are from the United States, but it's important to realize that our experiences with creatures here are not the only ones. But that's all for the questions and answers this time. Now it's time for the cryptid that I'd like to talk about in this letter. I've gotten comments asking about this monster, so I figured I'd cover it sooner rather than later. It has two main names, Wolfman and Dogman. The name Wolfmen, or Wolf People, came around earlier, since that's what certain native groups have traditionally called these creatures. But Dogmen seems to be a more popular term in recent decades, so please excuse me if I use the different names interchangeably. Dogmen range all across North America, Europe, and parts of Asia, and they are exactly what they sound like. They are bipedal humanoids, usually between 6 and 10 feet tall, weighing from 250 up to anywhere 1,000 pounds. They have longer arms than humans, but otherwise their general body structure is similar. Wolfmen's heads, however, are those of a large dog or wolf. Usually their heads look basically identical to those of a German Shepherd, a Husky, or a wolf. They have longer canines than any of those animals, though. Their hands have 5 fingers on them, which all end in sharp nails. But they don't quite have opposable thumbs like humans. Their feet are canine, with foot pads exactly like those of a wolf or an enormous dog. Besides these pads and the palms of their hands, dogmen are covered in fur. Their fur is usually shorter than that of a Sasquatch, but can still grow up to several inches long. Usually, dogmen's hair is black or gray, but it can be chocolate brown sometimes. They're usually darker in color than other creatures like Sasquatches. Wolfmen are usually solitary, but in rare cases they can form packs. These packs are usually no more than 5 in number, but the largest pack that the hunters have on record was 13 strong. Dogmen are highly aggressive and extremely dangerous, and for this reason, it is very difficult to study them. They will often attack on sight, and they are predators in every sense of the word. They often run on 2 legs but will drop onto all 4s if they need extra speed, and they are incredibly fast. They are also very heavily muscled, and their sheer strength rivals that of even a Sasquatch. And most dangerously, they are quite intelligent. Like wolves or African wild dogs, they communicate with each other when hunting in packs, and their coordination can be deadly. They're cunning, and maybe the scariest thing about them is that they have cognitive thinking. Among North American monsters, wolfmen are some of the most dangerous. They can be hard to track down, and they are definitely hard to hunt. Many people, hunters, and otherwise, have fallen prey to them. They are absolutely deadly, and have to be avoided at all cost. If you're like me, you may be asking where in the world would these things possibly have come from. How does something as bizarre as a wolf-human hybrid evolve? I have a theory for this, and although it may be wrong, it's the best I've got. This may sound completely fantastical or far-fetched, but it's the only thing I've been able to come up with. It revolves around the disease known as lycanthropy. I've seen the effects of this condition while working in France and England. From all the evidence I can gather from it,